Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, joined by Mr. Tim Davis. Tim, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Sean. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you. Now, Tim, take me through, one, your current role and a day in the life of CTI.
So my current role is a lead cyber threat intelligence analyst on the cyber threat intelligence team. My day-to-day, it can vary, you know, responding to members, reporting incidents, running down leads, searching for new malicious IP addresses or domains that are out there, generating analytic reports to help our members be best prepared to meet to defend against today's threats. You know, there's a whole lot that goes into it, but it's all really important work to help ensure the safety of the state, local, tribal, and territorial communities.
Absolutely. And one of those aspects, Tim, that I want to dive into today is malware takedown. Really looking at key players in the space, some of the underlying malware operational functionality that exists that ultimately, you know, we're here to dismantle necessarily. Some of, you know, the challenges that may be in that space, legal, jurisdictional, and then also working through a response, right? Ultimately, there's a takedown. Necessarily, what does the cyber criminal do in response to that? So as we dive into this particular topic, Tim, when we're thinking malware takedown, you know, what's usually involved? What's a typical process when you've identified certain infrastructure that needs to be treated necessarily?
Sure. So there are a couple layers to malware takedowns. The first and foremost is the response from law enforcement agencies, from international partners, to actually take down whatever is malicious. This could be a website, this could be a server, this could be removing malware from your computer. We've seen that before. There's a lot of layers to that particular aspect. There are also indictments that could be handed down. We see those come from our Department of Justice pretty frequently, where they will actually name specific individuals who are responsible for malware or ransomware or other attacks that are going on out there. And sometimes you might even see the arrest of individuals who have been responsible for some of these attacks. Actually, it's great timing with this podcast because just on February 10th, we announced the Department of Justice announced arrests of two Russian nationals who were affiliated with a ransomware group. So you can see this in action, you know, just as recently as this week. It's a very fluid situation with how takedowns evolve over time. It's a very complex process. You know, I'm sure we're going to dive into a lot of that on the podcast, but there's a lot of layers, a lot of organizations that need to be involved. But at the end of the day, you know, boiled down to their simplistic, malware takedowns are about getting the bad stuff off of your computer, shutting down the website, shutting down the servers to stop people from going there. May not be a permanent solution, but it at least disrupts current activity, current operations, and helps make folks a little bit safer along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's an element of disruption. I love that word because that is part of underlying necessarily the process, right? There's elements of detection and elements where we want to bring in appropriate approaches. And in this case, there's a lot of coordination doing that as well, Tim. So some of the key players, I think you mentioned some, you know, with law enforcement is huge, but persons like yourself, you know, threat researchers doing that threat intelligence and understanding what necessarily infrastructure is doing, and then also the consequences of necessarily that malware on an individual system or necessarily in a server infrastructure and organizations compute processes. So some of the key players there, Tim, that you work with.
So everyone contributes to these sorts of things. You know, obviously the biggest one is going to be law enforcement, and that response can be huge. For example, a disruption of the CACBOT malware a couple years ago. You had the United States, you had France, Germany, the Netherlands, the United Kingdom, Romania, Latvia. You had all of these countries working together to disrupt this absolutely massive malware strain. International partners, I just listed a few there. We've had other ones that work with our law enforcement agencies all the time to disrupt these. A lot of great partnerships built on existing treaties, existing relationships, because this is such a global problem. It doesn't recognize international boundaries, so we need to be able to work with those partners. So obviously law enforcement, international partners, those are two of the biggest ones. But then you come down to, Sean, like you were talking about, the researchers, the private companies, they all play a part too. The work that gets done to analyze malware strains, to look at network traffic, all of that plays a part. Maybe it doesn't make it into the final nice indictment that comes down from the Department of Justice, but it plays a role in giving law enforcement an idea of what they're looking at. Look at some of those big companies out there like Google or Microsoft. They have world-class threat intelligence analysts that produce really good quality papers and insight into what's going on out there. And those are essential for understanding how some of these groups are operating, because just because of the reach of these companies, they have a level of insight that very few other people do into how these threat actors are leveraging their networks or their systems to be able to do that. You can see that with other companies as well that may work with the Department of Justice or other law enforcement agencies to help them understand how their systems, how their services, their software are being exploited. And you know what? Our members, the state, local, tribal, and territorial governments out there, they play a role too. Because being able to report what they're seeing, being able to give us an understanding of the threat activity that's out there, that ultimately plays a role in this too. Maybe a smaller role, but it's an absolutely critical one. Because if we don't have an understanding of the scope and scale of malware campaigns, ransomware attacks, all of that, then we don't know how to escalate and prioritize what to take down. You know, resources are limited everywhere, so we have to prioritize. And having that understanding and our ability to work with our federal partners, that all plays a role in these sorts of takedowns.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a lot of coordination, right? And I think, like you say, there's an ability for really good threat research, but if it's not put into the right hands, necessarily it's nullified its effect, right, on ultimately this the underlying malware infrastructure. Let's talk malware operational functions really quickly. Now, there may be different flavors, but, you know, kind of a general view of what an operational function looks like in terms of both, you know, preparation, delivery, and then obviously maintaining access. We could, you know, do some kill chain elements there if we needed to. But what makes those types of infrastructures and also some of the tactics that are used difficult to dismantle those operational elements there, Tim?
So one of the biggest challenges is just how much the infrastructure can change. You know, the indicators we have today, they're not necessarily the ones we're going to see tomorrow. In the time, you know, we're recording this podcast, a threat actor out there could be changing over the websites they're using, the server they're using, the IP address tied to them. They can change that all over. You know, we block them here, they'll just move over here. It's kind of like an international game of whack-a-mole. Except there are like thousands of moles out there and we have one hammer. So it can be a challenge because that, you know, thinking about takedowns, you list out the IP addresses. Okay, these all need to be blocked. Well, a week later, maybe those are all out of date now and they're coming at you from a completely different place that wasn't on that list. And that can make that difficult to dismantle. Another aspect here is shared infrastructure. If you're using an IP address for some sort of malicious purpose, but there are other legitimate websites hosted on it, it can be a problem in terms of blocking that IP address or doing anything else to take it down. So that's where partnerships with private companies and all of that comes into play. Really, there's so much that goes into how these malware operators function. We've seen as a service models where they'll just simply build a tool and then sell it out to folks for them to be able to use. And when you're thinking about indictments or arrests, you know, we're not friendly with some of the countries that these threat actors choose to live in. So being able to actually carry out these arrests, that can be difficult. You know, the Department of Justice does great work and brings down indictments against, just to name one, some Iranian threat actors that have gone after our systems before. But the odds that those folks will ever actually face justice for their crimes are fairly low because Iran is probably not going to turn those over to our government to be prosecuted. So that can play a role in really limiting our ability to permanently disrupt some of these malware operations.
Absolutely. So many factors. And it's, you know, we wish it were one because that's something we could, but like you say, it's so distributed in terms of the delivery. It also aligns to, you know, some thoughts here, Tim, with everything that we enable in terms of automation and capability and elasticity and building resilient systems. It's all replicated in the same ecosystem, right? Everything that we want to build properly using best practices, that's mirrored and utilized in these same ways. And that just, now you're looking to then build a capability against all of this really cool, necessary ecosystem that's built to keep websites up and keep them resilient. And facing those challenges, I can imagine it's very, very difficult in that space. But it leads me to one of the things you'd mentioned, and I think jurisdictional is huge, right? You know, as you mentioned on February 10th with identified Russian, you know, hackers in that space. We've seen a lot of, you know, on the top 10 lists of certain individuals from certain countries, you know, nation states that are adversarial, obviously, in nature. And like you say, there's not a lot of repercussion, right? It's just, we've identified this person, we know who you are, and okay, that's kind of it. So when you're dealing with those types of actions necessarily, or let's more precisely, inaction, you know, when we're thinking of the legal and jurisdictional challenges, does that cause issues? And just given the intertwined nature of, like you say, shared IP address with legitimate versus, you know, hosted malicious, that must have some very, very, I think it becomes diplomatic versus a technical challenge in some cases, Tim.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. I mean, I think that's part of why sometimes it can take so long to see these takedowns occur is we have to do everything legally. You know, they can break all the laws in the world that they want to, but at the end of the day, we need to make sure we're being better than them and we're following the law and doing this the right way. And when you're dealing with so many countries that have their own little quirks and their jurisdictions and their own legal process, you got to make sure you follow all of it. And that can take time. It can take time to get a warrant to be able to seize a server or take down a domain. All of these things, it takes time. And that couple that with the shifting infrastructure and that capabilities, you know, yes, it can definitely make it a very complicated process. Everyone's process for dealing with these is different. But I think what you've seen over time is the process gets better. We're doing a lot, or, you know, we being the United States is doing a lot of these takedowns with international partners, and the ability for us to work seamlessly with them and go after the threat actors that are out there. I think the longer this goes on, the better you see that process play out and the more impact it's going to have on being able to actually really disrupt some of these for longer and longer periods of time.
Yeah, I think it's just a reaction. We have to, right? I mean, this a lot of this activity is obviously focused on, we'll call them underserved, those without necessarily technical capability, or those with necessarily when we'll take malware and we'll change that, you know, we'll just add the parenthetic of ransomware. We'll hit some buzzword bingo somewhere, Tim. But we'll take that. And then we think about the consequences, the funding of continued cyber criminal activity, all of the elements, again, another part of this process, this ecosystem is very, very challenging. And, you know, we can see that it is, we're going to have, I'll say it this way, like a visceral reaction, because it just cannot continue the way it is. And we've got to create alliances and we've got to look at underlying infrastructure and creating protective capability. Now, necessarily, we could go through people, process, technology, and start identifying the weaknesses and say, we've got to fix this, this, and this. But ultimately, I think it's a little bit grander than trying to negate some elements of each one of those pieces. It's a more broader approach. And I think that's, again, where the diplomacy comes in, where we build, you know, potential foreign policy that fits in that space. And then also thinking about technical strategies that we need to either understand to a greater level or have an ability to necessarily investigate a little bit more broadly When, you know, there are some legal and jurisdictional elements in that space. So, Tim, when it comes to, you know, the process of investigation, the identification of malware networks necessarily, what steps are going through? One, validate that, you know, it's not spoofed necessarily and we're targeting legitimate capability and, you know, there's some trickery in that space. I'll use trickery instead of tactics and techniques just for fun. But what's in those elements there, Tim, doing that investigation?
Yeah, you really hit the main one there. And that's just trying to figure out what the actual bad stuff that's out there really, really is. The other huge part of it, you know, getting those warrants and the jurisdiction to be able to take it down. On the cyber threat intelligence team, you know, we can monitor ransomware leak sites all the time. They're fairly well-known infrastructure. If you're monitoring ransomware groups, you know what the website is. So in that case, the question isn't, you know, can the Department of Justice go take down that website? I'm sure they could, because it's a known entity, it's a known factor that's out there, but that doesn't solve the problem. You need to actually disrupt the network, which means you need to identify the key players. You need to identify their infrastructure and be very, very sure that you actually own their infrastructure. There have been some interesting cases of you know, I'll use takedowns that have occurred where you're looking at within a week or so, you start to see things spinning back up again. And the malware wasn't actually taken down. It was just a minor blip on the radar of being disrupted. Another aspect that goes into this is identifying victim networks and victim computers. You've seen this recently where the Department of Justice and the federal government will actually make sure they're the ones who can just remove the malware from people's computers. Obviously with permission, legally working, you know, all of that within the correct framework. But I think that's a really important step here is instead of telling people these are the steps you need to take to do this, which, as you know, some non-technical folks out there in the general public, they just may not know how to extract malware from their computer that they use once a day. So being able to have folks actually, with permission again, go in, remove that to make sure your system is safe and secure, that's hugely important. But that's also another hugely important step. So make sure you've got the right thing that you want to remove from that system. You've identified for sure this is the piece of malware we need to remove to make sure that it all goes away and everybody is safe and happy again. But it could be a long process just to identify how many devices have been infected. How widespread is this actually? And then you have the competing priorities as well, which is, okay, if you're monitoring, say, a nation state group, do you want to disrupt what they're doing, or do you want to sort of watch the watchers? If they're sitting inside a network, do you want to be the one to not necessarily take them down the moment you find them, but observe what they're doing, learn a little bit more about them, because then maybe you can learn a little bit more about other malware they have or other tactics they're doing and other things that are going on out there, so you can even further degrade and disrupt their activity. And you see this with this geopolitical chess game we play. You know, think of China. They're constantly trying to hack our critical infrastructure. I am sure we are doing something similar to theirs because it's a geopolitical chess game. We all play the game. But sometimes you want to see, are we actually going to disrupt this? Are we going to watch what they're doing, try to learn from it, and figure out how to defend other things from it, knowing that we can remove them at a moment's notice if we need to? So that's all those considerations that go into play. You know, I'm sure there's a lot more discussions that happen at a lot higher level than me to figure out what to do with all this, but it's a very, very complex process. And, you know, Sean, to a point you made earlier on the podcast, I agree. Something's got to change, because while the process is certainly improving, I think you can see a lot of frustration with folks that it seems to never end. It seems like every single month there's a new breach in our telecommunications network. There's another hospital that got taken over by ransomware, had operations disrupted, another police department that can't do things because their computers are locked up as well. You know, it's a huge problem. And while the takedowns can be effective to an extent, I think you can see that it has not really slowed the spread to the point where you're seeing this notable decline in the amount of reporting of things like ransomware that's going on out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think where I take issue with it is we've kind of become numb to it. If, you know, every week there's a different, like you say, every month, every week, there's a new data breach, all your credentials have been shared, stolen, whatever it happens to be. And again, it's becoming numb to that is kind of not the right approach. You know, we should be expecting better and be able necessarily to respond with a capability that, one, helps protection, you know, implementation of certain controls, management of that data, encryption of that data, and those types of things. You know, we've got to take a responsibility necessarily, but then obviously being able to hold those accountable for performing such activity is also important. That's an element of the justice, I think, in the space. And again, not obviously we're not speaking from a legal perspective, just a matter of opinion. But it's very important that we certainly try to understand. And really, when it comes into this response strategy, I think, because ultimately, is there elements we could do to be preventative so that we're never in this case of having to respond and go through malware takedown? It's kind of addressed before it even happens. I wish. We don't live in that world. And ultimately, you know, it leads us to having to have some key technical strategies, I think, Tim, in the space to neutralize malware. You know, I'm thinking of the C2 servers, right, that will do the command and control and work with whatever's installed. And, you know, is that exfiltration of data? Is that undermining certain network infrastructure? Is that taking down individual systems, rewriting the integrity of certain files and capability? But what are some of the other key technical strategies that you see, Tim, being used to neutralize malware?
So that's a big one. Sinkholing domains is another big one, at taking down those domains as well. You know, I'm sure some of us are familiar with those giant, "this website has been seized" banner from the FBI that, you know, makes you maybe heart race just a little bit when you go and see the screenshot of that on your computer. So those are a couple big ones. Releasing the decryption key for ransomware, that's a huge one. That to me is one of the most impactful things that can happen, is if our federal partners can figure out the decryption key for ransomware or find it somewhere and be able to unlock those systems and really neutralize that threat. That's a really important one there as well. And also some of it's just exposing it. If you do a large enough exposure, I know we've talked about how they can shift infrastructure, but with some of these releases, you can see, you know, thousands of domains, hundreds and thousands of IP addresses being released. That level of disruption of infrastructure, that does take just a little bit to re-up everything and build it back up to whatever you had that has now been exposed to the public. So that's another important one there. Even if you can't take down every IP address and block every IP address, just being able to pass that information to the public, expose what's going on there, that has a huge capability for network defenders to be able to disrupt that activity even further and investigate their networks to see if they got compromised.
Yeah. And again, like you say, it's trying to chip away necessarily at this infrastructure to make it less effective. Ultimately, with, you know, greater technical capability that requires them to rethink certain strategies in terms of building an underlying infrastructure in that space. And with that, we'll be right back after this quick break. Are you a US state, local, tribal, or territorial government organization? Well, if so, you know how remote and hybrid work models make it really difficult to protect your endpoints and manage your vulnerabilities. Well, this is where CIS Endpoint Security Services can help. Now available exclusively to US SLTTs like yours, CIS ESS deploys directly on endpoint devices to help you identify, detect, respond to, and remediate endpoint security incidents and alerts. Now it works in partnership with our 24/7/365 CIS Security Operations Center, which analyzes threat detections and notifies you of actionable endpoint security incidents, all within 5 minutes. Now, ESS also comes with add-on and standalone capabilities that provide real-time insight into vulnerability and mobile devices, including those of subordinate organizations you oversee. So strengthen your endpoint defenses today by visiting cisecurity.org.
Thank you. And let's jump back into the episode.
Now, we go through this process, Tim. We look at taking down malware infrastructure. What's really the response in this case? Now, we touched, you know, a little bit on the automation, you know, could be just recycle, rebuild, and, you know, create a algorithmically generated domain, and I'm off again. You know, it's all done in a flash. But necessarily, do they apply their own security best practices? And do you ever see retaliation, maybe from those either that exposed that underlying infrastructure, or potentially it's not really worth my time. You know, that this is money generating. It's not revenge. It's, again, obviously looking at the modus operandi necessarily of the individual attackers and their motives is looking then, are they just going to, it's why we play the game, right? It's cat and mouse. You caught me. I'm just going to be a new mouse and we'll do things a little bit differently. Yeah. How does that look?
It's a mix of all of it. You do see threat actors out there that, you know, the malware gets disrupted and it can go quiet for weeks or months at a time and then slowly reemerge itself. Cobalt Strike is a great one. You'll see on occasion, there'll be a Cobalt Strike takedown. Things will go quiet for a little while. Cobalt Strike gets used even more because it's not going away. It can be a legitimate tool for folks. So you see that happen. With some, you know, specifically with ransomware groups, you do see a mixed bag of reactions. They're interesting groups in the first place, and their reaction to takedowns can be very odd. You have had ones promise revenge and, shockingly, never follow through on their promises. You've had ones claim they're going to leak a huge amount of data in retaliation, and the data they leak is nothing to write home about. A lot of the times they do rebuild with ransomware groups in particular. You see them, they'll rename themselves. They'll merge. Sometimes they'll split. They will do all sorts of things and reappear eventually. Short of arresting all of them, you know, we have seen them come back under different names, perhaps with some different TTPs, but by and large, they do tend to come back. These disruptions, they're very rarely permanent in nature. It's very hard to permanently disrupt some of these groups because, again, it gets back to some of the folks behind this. We just can't arrest. We don't have the ability to do that. But what it does help do is disrupt it. Even if it's just temporarily, it gives network defenders, it gives folks a bit of breathing room. Before the next mouse gets generated that's out there, you know, they're able to address this problem, take a bit of a breather, and then we move on to the next one. Because, like I said earlier, it's a game of international whack-a-mole. There's always going to be another one. Even if we found a way to permanently disrupt one specific strain of malware that's out there, another one is just going to pop up at some point. You know, we've talked about generative AI on this podcast before. That's a huge player in being able to generate malware and find ways to modify existing malware to make it even better. So we're never going to defeat it completely, but things like takedowns, they do help. They have their place and they are super important.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've got to show at least some initiative to bring it down, or they'll just, okay, we're just going to continue and you'll leave us alone. Wonderful. Obviously not the case. We're, you know, ever vigilant, as it were. And like yourself, Tim, you know, doing the threat intelligence, the threat research, trying to understand. And I think in some cases you mentioned, you know, it may not be a true stop to cybercrime, maybe a pause necessarily in certain actors' activities, but they're motivated to come back, right? I mean, ultimately, in the long run, these types of tactics work. Right, we wouldn't have to stop something bad if something bad didn't happen in the first place. Right, the cause and effect. We slow it down, but in some cases, one of the things I've seen, and again, I wanted to get your opinion is what I think happens ultimately. Okay, lessons learned. Now, where do we go? Is there something different we want to do? Is there literally a tweak in some cases can change a signature detection to making it benign for necessarily the new flavor that has been generated. And in some cases, some maybe switch certain industry focus. Okay, we've had our fun necessarily in finance, let's move on to education. And those I think are very, very interesting because it's then different perspectives because representatively, I'll say this, I think financial has a way more funding than an educational approach. And it just seems we're moving and maybe we take that tactics and we then focus it on a different group that are not as savvy, not as aware, don't have necessarily the resources, leading us to we've got to help those with the without necessarily the savvy, the resources with true open source intelligence elements, open source capability. And then the services necessarily that we're providing through the ISECs is so important to help, really. And I think in a lot of cases, that's your detection. That's you know, bringing professionals like yourself to the table and really being able to, I say, through the maturity line get to approach where this is a managed capability that we can then, one, help you understand, help you disrupt, and help protect. Does that all ring true in your mind, Tim, or any other thoughts you'd have there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, malware takedowns, they're just one tool we have. A lot of what we do, particularly on the CIS side, we try to raise awareness. We try to give folks the information they need to be secure and to defend their networks. We're not going to be the ones who are going in the network, taking things down, as fun as that might be to do. But really, Sean, like you were mentioning, you know, it's about spreading that knowledge and giving folks the tools they need. And that's where CIS comes into play with the services we can offer our members, the intelligence briefings we do, things like this podcast to raise awareness. They're all part of our defensive strategy. No one thing is ever going to work. It's impossible to do just one thing and somehow fix it all and defeat all the malware in the world. That's Hollywood stuff. That's never going to happen. But what we can do is defense in depth, is a holistic strategy focused on everyone, focused on making sure we're providing people the resources they need to defend their networks. And if we see things about malware takedowns, we see that information coming up, we're able to take it and pass it on to our members and give them the information that maybe they weren't tracking. So it all fits together. You know, it's a challenging time in the field of cybersecurity. It's undoubtedly going to get more challenging, but that's what we're here for. That's what we do. We want to make sure we're helping people and defending folks, and we're going to keep doing that.
Wonderful. Tim, another great episode. Again, you're a regular on the show now, which is fantastic. Thank you so much for what you do and what you bring to the community and to really protecting a lot of individuals that may not have an opportunity to thank you directly in the teams and everything that we do, but it's really, truly appreciated. And again, continue the really good work that you all do.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And thank you to our audience. Questions, comments, concerns, reach out to us at podcast@cisecurity.org. Make sure to subscribe in all the usual ways on your favorite podcast software. And find us on YouTube at The CI Security. Make sure to hit that subscribe button and the bell for notifications of episodes like this and much, much more. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.